one today.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. Because so is my daughter.
Happy birthday.
She is 21 today and Ron Holland is 21 today.
These are facts.
I did not know that.
No? No, you know.
I knew my daughter's birthday.
Well, I would hope that you might want to know.
Woo! But, yeah, I did not know the Ron Holland thing. Interesting. So.
You got plans tonight?
Yeah, we do. I think she's going out with my wife and buying a round of drinks. Mimosas is what I've heard. So, yeah. Instead of listening to the show for 4 hours like she usually does.
So, your 21st birthday, do you remember?
No. I really don't.
You don't?
I don't. I'm guessing you do.
I mean, I do, but not, it's not. I remember I was home from school that weekend. It actually fell on like a Friday or a Saturday that year. And I went to dinner with my parents and my brother downtown to the Roma Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
Had a great dinner. And then my brother was going to take me out to a couple bars. And I was so full from the dinner. I'm like, all right, we can go. But this isn't going to be like, you know, a typical college night of drinking here. I just don't have a whole lot of room left. And we went to a couple of bars and just had a drink or two along the way. And it was tame. Very tame.
Sure.
It was much different when I returned to college the following week or so, or maybe it was 2 weeks, because I think we were right around spring break time. Much different when I returned to school and then went out with my friends around town in East Lansing. That was a good time.
I just got an interesting theory here that's come in via feedback regarding what could be a game changer for U.S. soccer that is looming. And I think it's really intriguing, and we will get to that today at 11:16. We'll talk some Tigers at 11:30. In the meantime, back to your phone calls. Devin is next on 97.1. Hello, Devin.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
What's up?
Thank you for taking my call. Appreciate it. I just had some thoughts on the U.S. soccer team.
Okay.
So I'm not putting this on Poch at all. I think the formation he used, the 3-5-2, he actually used it throughout the whole World Cup, and it's meant to be more kind of like it could be go either way, offensive or defensive, because the two outside backs kind of can go all the way up or come all the way back to help. I thought he made the halftime adjustment where he put in Reyna to try to get more offensive, and it was working. We had the momentum at the start of the second half. For me, it's just the players just underperformed, you know, giving one up early right away. Giving one up again right away after we score. The goalie blunder for the third one, and it was over, you know. So for me, it's not on the coach. It's on the players. Totally just underperforming.
Devin, and we've admitted this is a hole in our game when it comes to our knowledge, and there's listeners out there that know more about this. My instinct tells me you're more right than wrong, that we're over analyzing everything collectively, just like we do in every other sport. And that the players, they picked a bad night to have a bad night. Feels probably exactly. More accurate than anything else. I was thinking about like the no-show aspect. Like, the most empty feeling I had where the team that I was there for did not show was game 7 of the Stanley Cup against the Pittsburgh Penguins. The first 6 games, the entire season, everything, the Red Wings looked one way, and then they get to game 7 at home at the Joe, and they looked like a completely different team. They didn't look like themselves at all, and I'm like, what the hell? And this, not nearly on the scale of importance for me, but I had that feeling last night. Who the hell are these guys? What the hell is this? I picked a bad night to have a bad night. Feels more accurate to me.
Oftentimes, I fall back to perhaps this is Occam's razor, which is the simplest explanation tends to be the right one, and that is Belgium's better, period.
I'm not willing to accept that.
I am, and I think that's exactly what happened. Yeah, hey, you know what? Belgium's better. They're supposed to win. We're a top 10 team. The United States is not. We were a nice story. Home team had that advantage, but in the end, talent wins, and they're a better team. Back to the drawing board.
248-539-9797. E in Detroit. What's up, E?
Good morning. Good morning, fellas. First and foremost, I got to say this, man. The USA team, they came out flat. And when Belgium scored first and we scored, Belgium, they didn't break, they didn't budge. They knew they had the game in the bag. I think USA was overconfident when Trump overturned the red card, and they just knew they had the game in the bag. And this is the biggest choke job, I believe, in the last 10 to 15 years
Understand what you say. When you're saying choke job, so you thought that they had this game in the bag?
They thought they had it in the bag. Everybody thought they had it in the bag. It's in your country. You're in Seattle.
So?
They said when they played and they won that 5-2, they're friendly. A lot of the American players didn't even play in that game.
So did Mexico choke against England because they were playing in their own country?
We talking about the United States, right?
You're just saying it because the reason you're giving is because they're playing in their own country. I mean, Mexico lost at home against England.
But you got to think about the emotions. You got to think about the emotions and everything. Everybody over the weekend, we was mad because our best player didn't play. Did he call Papa Trump? Trump overturned it, and he was able to play.
USA filed the appeal, and they got the process rolling. Trump calling had no effect on it. But
it was probably more performative than anything. But, yes, Team USA, the reading the analysis of what happened, they filed the appeal based upon a rule. The wheels were in motion for that by the time Trump called. But were they also potentially overconfident? Yeah, I think he might be right on that.
I would agree with that if they looked overconfident, but they didn't look overconfident.
I think they might have got caught up in the hype.
I think they looked confused and scared.
Do you?
Yeah. I mean, it didn't take long for Belgium to get on the board, and it was like, wow, okay. And finger pointing starts happening. Well, I thought you were going to, but he got behind, but they tied it up.
It was a pretty weak first goal. And then the third goal
goes nuts when they tie it up. But then the second goal happens 2 minutes later and completely, cut you off at the knees. Like, oh, that just happened. And the third goal was ridiculous.
The third goal was a mental Kansas, a momentary mental Kansas. Froze.
And he did. And that's not overconfidence. That's just ill preparedness.
Here we go. Feedback coming in. The Lions have talent on par with the best teams in the NFL. Unlike the U.S. men's national team, it looks like a Division III basketball team playing against Michigan when they go up against the best teams in the world. Next text. The Lions have a better chance to win a Super Bowl than the U.S. men's national team to win a World Cup. Parity in the NFL is much closer, so it happens every year. We are too far behind the rest of the world soccer-wise. Joe and Gibraltar, definitely the Lions win the Super Bowl. They would round out my championships. I think the U.S. is on its way, and I expect us to compete with the top teams by 2034 or 2038. Okay, 2038? Like, the kids on that team are now like 10 years old? Anyway, when I was a kid, there was no such thing as soccer moms in high school. We didn't have teams. I enjoyed playing in gym class and was good at it. Might have played had we had those teams. The U.S. population is much greater than the top European football nations. There are a lot of kids playing here. The numbers are in our favor. Next text. The best athletes' arguments is such a lazy excuse. 95% of the players in the World Cup don't look like NBA or NFL athletes. They're smaller and more skilled. The U.S. team was clearly more athletic than Belgium. We just lacked the skill.
I don't know if they're clearly more athletic. I like Wojo's take on it. You see Wojo's tweet? He says, I say this without snark. The soccer elite did a very poor job portraying USA's chances to us non-soccer elitists. Watching that 4-1 Belgium win, here's my freshly earned analysis. It looked like a 6-seed systematically handling business against an 11-seed in the NCAA tournament.
Okay.
Yeah.
The problem with MLS, outside of a few players like Messi, the MLS is like watching the USFL in football. The Premier League in England is the NFL of soccer. So, yeah, I mean, look, the interest in the game, I don't know if it grows because of this. I've heard that, and I don't know if it has any impact because I've heard that story since I was a kid, and we still look like the exact same damn team. In the meantime, somebody did offer something up, and it's a fresh take on what could make a difference. And I want to get your take on it because a window might be opening here for U.S. soccer. We'll get to that today at 11:16 on Carson Anderson on 97.1. Hey, remember talking to some people at ESPN when the NHL went on strike and they said to me, you know what was interesting about that? And it's why the NHL ended up on Outdoor Life Network when they came back.
OLN.
Which became Versus. Is because the ESPN, this person at ESPN, here's what they told me. And I didn't like research this or anything, but they told me they had all these crews hired to do the NHL playoffs. And then there was nothing. And they decided to put them all on college baseball and college softball. Not the play-by-play guys necessarily, but like all the camera crews, the directors, everybody behind the scenes. They took them and they put them on these college baseball and college softball games. And you know what they got? They got comparable ratings. And they didn't have to pay rights fees the way they had to pay the NHL. It was much cheaper to go broadcast college baseball and college softball than it was to broadcast the NHL. And when the NHL got its act together, they came back. And again, this is what I was told. They came back to ESPN and ESPN said, you know what? We're good because we're actually getting the same results and we don't have to invest as much money as far as ratings are concerned. The NHL was left scrambling. They ended up on Outdoor Life Network. Now, the NHL is in a much healthier place. They got their act together and it's great to see. And oh, by the way, ESPN has carved out a place for college baseball and college softball on their various networks. Kitech sent this last hour, and I thought it was interesting. MLS needs to take massive advantage of the inevitable MLB strike. Whether or not, and that was the text they posted on Twitch, and I'm like, I don't know if it's apples to apples, but it's interesting. If there is an MLB strike and there's a void in the sports world, can MLS somehow take advantage and hence soccer fill a bit of the void from a standpoint? It won't be the same. I'm not making the argument that MLS is going to take off, but can it gain a little traction, a little market share, and maybe make soccer a little bit bigger of a deal so that when we return, and I probably should correct something I've been saying we've been hearing about soccer's momentum for our entire lives. And I shouldn't say, and here we have the same team. We don't have the same team necessarily. We probably have a much better team, but we're getting the same result. We're still, hey, make the knockout stage, early exit, which is pretty much us every World Cup, it feels like. So is there a void here? Is there an opportunity, I guess, for soccer to maybe pick up a little bit of market share and improve its long-term standing if there is an MLB work stoppage?
I guess maybe. I don't know.
I don't know either.
It's
an interesting theory.
Yeah, it's an interesting theory based on, but I'm not buying it. No, I'm not going to buy that.
No?
Mm-mm.
Why not?
Because I just don't think there's interest in MLS. I think there was interest in the World Cup.
Do you think there was interest in college baseball and college softball when the NHL left the window open?
I think that's a little different because, you know, baseball is a mainstream sport. So when you have a chance to watch it more often than ever because, you know, hockey's out, then I had a chance. But soccer's not a mainstream sport here in the United States yet.
Got me thinking that if I'm running MLS and I've got money to invest in somehow market, I try desperately to take advantage of a sports void if and when baseball has a work stop.
Well, and one thing we know is that Four Letter Network will try to ram it down your throat with whatever it is they're pushing. And if there's no baseball, then yeah, I mean, I would try to do the same thing. I think it's wise. I don't know if it's going to have a long-term effect, though.
248-539-9797. Let's get back to your phone calls. We'll talk some Tigers at 11:30. Interesting story by a beat writer today. We go to Keith in Oxford. What's up, Keith?
Hey. Hey, how are you guys doing today? Sorry.
What's up?
So I watched the game last night, and you could tell that every player on the U.S. team seemed to not want to be that guy to make the mistake, which – the passes weren't crisp. They weren't hitting. They weren't attacking the first half. And I think that's what caused it. It just seemed they were so pensive about wanting to attack. And I don't think that was from a coaching standpoint. I think that was just the players. But based off the history against
Keith, we're losing you. I'm sorry. We'll try and circle back, but you got a bad sell. Mike is next on 97.1. Hello, Mike.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to touch on the gap that we're seeing in soccer and where I believe it comes from. And when you look at the club system, there's so many clubs out there. It's so watered down. And we pay, in essence, a $5,500 a year plus travel plus $1,000 uniform kits that get changed out every other year. What the clubs here do, they thrive on the dollar, which they're nonprofit, or they are for profit, right? And they tell you that your kid's awesome. They change the names of these leagues from ECNL to ECNL-RL to ECNL-RL-GMA, and they tell you you're playing in this high level when you're not. And very few clubs have true paths to success, meaning you want to play college, you have these goals that you want to meet, and if you attend those clubs, it'll be effective. If you don't, you're going to be paying all this money, and you're going to have this kid that can barely make a varsity high school soccer team that has been playing ECNL at this, quote, top level. And it's a big ruse, man. And I have buddies that are over in London, and they actually choked when I told them what we pay for club soccer. They said it's like $600 for a season for youth soccer over there, and then they get into these national programs. So it's actually our economy is what's driving it, and these guys that are these club owners taking advantage.
I don't know if you're right or wrong. By point of comparison, there are, travel sports has changed so much. It's essentially the club model that they've used overseas forever. When travel sports first got here, it was, you tried out. There was usually communities had one team, and the 75 kids that didn't make it all just went home. Now the 75 kids that don't make it make up the, the B team, the blue team, the mauve team, and they all get spots on the team, and the top ones go play double gold bronze, and the other ones are playing silver magenta. Shout out to the dude on TikTok that does the, I guess it's Instagram that does the baseball videos about how parents get wrapped up in double gold bronze versus silver magenta. They do put fancy names on the leagues. Yeah, man, it's, you might be right. You might be right. I feel like that's a claim that requires an entire study of how the youth programs work overseas compared to this.
Yeah, I don't know how they work overseas. Do teams, when you have travel teams in England, are they just traveling throughout their country, or are they branching out and, hey, we've got a tournament in Estonia this week? I don't know. Because distance-wise, that'd be the same thing as like, hey, we got a tournament in Laramie. But do they do that over there? I don't know. But we do that here. Part of the big appeal is that with the travel is when you get to travel great distances, and it's kind of cool to go to a whole other state.
A
different climate altogether.
For our kids, the way we saw it is fun, right? It was a lot of fun. What got really weird is when you travel to a different state and end up playing a team that is from your area. Which happened in hockey, I guess, a lot. When I talk to hockey parents, you go to a tournament in Minnesota and Bell Tire's playing Honey Baked in Minneapolis
instead of Royal Oak.
But that stuff was fun for the kids and fun for the parents, and that's kind of the way we took it. If you think you have to travel, I shouldn't say that. I think in some sports, you probably need to get in front of the right eyeballs in certain other areas of the country.
But, Doug, maybe this is the whole problem. It's not about fun. It's about winning and getting the best of the best.
That is correct. Tonight is the first of two Scooble bobblehead back-to-back Cy Young giveaways.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
People camped out already?
Well, I was going to say, do you think we're going to be taking calls about this in the next couple of days?
I think we'll solicit them, because I'm curious to see, what the earliest fan showing or sighting was. Because bobbleheads are a big deal. Kids love the bobbleheads. Parents love the bobbleheads, getting them to the kids. And then you've got people that sell them. But so
how many fans do you think are going to trade them?
That are just getting there, getting them for the investment?
Get them there, put them on eBay, trade them online.
Trade them or sell them?
Sell them, trade them, whatever.
I don't know if anybody's trading them. I think they'd be selling them. I think most would probably, well, I shouldn't say most. Maybe 40% would sell them.
I feel like this kind of stuff now is just going to people getting there early to sell them online. It's almost like it's impossible for a regular fan to just get these kind of things anymore.
Paul, I don't know if you're right or wrong. I'm not a collector. There's definitely a post-market. There's no question that by probably 8:30 tonight, maybe even earlier, it's 6:40 start. Is that right? So maybe by 7:30, hell, maybe by 7. Maybe before the game even starts, you'll be able to buy them online.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, someone's going to get it and, you know, walk into the game. I assume you can't get them until you walk into the game, and they don't let you in the game until, a couple hours before the game. But people will be, I think there's going to be a lineup of people before 5 o'clock to get into the stadium, maybe before 4 o'clock to get in the stadium. That's what I'm saying. What's the earliest sighting we're going to have of somebody, it's a beautiful day. It's gorgeous out.
Mm-hmm.
Going to stay that way, you know, just make a day of it in downtown Detroit. Go down and get something to eat, get some pizza, walk over, and then, you know, camp out, so to speak, starting at 3 or 4 o'clock.
Just messing around here on the Tigers website. There's still tickets available. Like, this game hasn't sold out.
No, but I don't think they have 30,000 bobbleheads either.
They don't do that.
I don't know if they've
first
released,
come, first serve, right?
Yeah, I don't think they've released the number, but I would imagine it's probably 10 or 15,000 at most.
Yeah, I mean, let me see if I can find out how many they have. Giveaways, back-to-back bobbleheads. Presented by Meyer, limited quantities. I might be wrong. My apologies. It's tomorrow and Wednesday.
Dog.
It's tomorrow and Wednesday. It's not tonight. But tomorrow and Wednesday. But Scooble's pitching tonight. Well, on the Tigers website, tomorrow and Wednesday.
Hmm.
Not tonight.
Not tonight.
No, wait.
Tomorrow is Wednesday.
I'm sorry. Today's Tuesday. I'm all kinds of a mess. It is tonight.
It's for Tuesday's game.
Tuesday and Wednesday. Yes, today is Tuesday. Sorry, I'm all
back-to-back nights they're doing the bobblehead.
Yes, tonight appears to be the white jersey. Tomorrow appears to be the road jersey.
You want to do that again? A 3-2-1?
3-2-1. Tonight is the giveaway. Home jersey tonight, road jersey tomorrow. It just says limited quantities.
So the bobblehead is what's being given away.
Yes.
Tarek Skubal bobblehead.
Not actual Skubal. You will not take actual Skubal home in a home jersey tonight, nor will you take road Skubal home tomorrow. Not a great segment for me. Carson Anderson, 97.1. Lines 248-539-9797. Let's get back to your open line calls. We're going to Mark in Sterling Heights. Hi, Mark.
Hey, what's going on, guys? How are you?
Okay.
I wanted to talk about, I've been wanting to call in the last couple of days. I've been having hope in the USA. I'm a big soccer guy, so I've been letting it simmer a little bit. But I knew it'd be so far gone. We would only get so far. Our best player is Flo Balogun, and we barely got lucky to get him. The only reason he decided to stay with the U.S. is because he wouldn't make it on England, because they have Harry Kane there, and they have a few guys that are better than Flo. I don't know if it's the grassroots. I think maybe the cream of the crop in America is choosing different sports. MLS is, like, our starting defense, we have a few guys. Our best players are playing throughout Europe. They're in Italy, they're in England, they're in France. But we still have players, our MLS
guys.
Well,
those guys playing in England, and those guys playing overseas in their professional season doesn't preclude them from coming back and playing here for our national team, though, right?
No, they're playing for America. Right. They're all on the World Cup team. But
so that's okay.
That are playing overseas, to me, it seems to be the problem. I feel like the guys that are sitting back home were the guys that I seen struggling while we were on the field. I don't know. We have Pulisic in Milan. We have Balogun. He's in France. He was in Milan for a little bit too.
All right, we keep losing you, Mark. Thank you for the phone call. We go to Danielle in Macomb. You're next. Hello, Danielle.
How you doing today?
We're good, thank you. And you?
Good, good. So we're going to tonight's Tigers game, and lo and behold, they only have 1,500 bobbleheads.
1,500?
That's it. 1,500. And it's my son's 9th birthday and my husband's 46th birthday, so I'm really going to try to get them.
How early do you plan on getting there?
Well, after listening to you, we were going to get there probably just before 5, but I think now we got to get there way earlier.
We're not great collectors on this. I don't know if we're authorities, but I don't know if you can be too early if they only have 1,500.
Yeah, that's nothing. I mean, it is what it is. Yeah, but hopefully we'll get a win, too, for the boys.
Sure. All right, well, good luck. Maybe report back and let us know if you had success.
I wonder what the strategy for this is. Like, with the giveaways, do they do the giveaways at every entry into the park?
I don't know.
And if there is, would you camp out at a different entry? Oh, I'm going to go by the main entry. Well, should you if they're at every entry to the park?
I don't know.
But I don't know where they're at.
I don't know either. We'll see if we can find out and help people out. But
do you collect bobbleheads at all?
Never have, no. Did you?
No, just because here at the station, sometimes there'll be something dropped off.
Yeah.
But I've never purchased a bobblehead. I've never sought one out.
Yeah. So they dropped off the Jake Bates.
Mm-hmm.
I've got Michigan one of those. Panthers bobblehead that we had there for a minute.
Yeah. That's sitting on my desk.
Yeah.
I have probably 6 or 7 at home. I used to have more, but I would give them away for like Christmas gifts or something like that.
People are saying they're 15,000.
I was going to say, I would imagine, 1,500 seems a little light.
Just looking at the texts as they come in. And I will tell you, I can't believe this is like the worst, least successful Google search I've ever had. I've been Googling this for 5 minutes trying to figure this out, and I can't. I mean, from before she called, I'm like, let me see how many there are they should give away. She said 1,500. I'm getting nothing, and I don't know why.
Am I old man yelling at clouds if I think it's wrong if anybody over the age of 25 wants a bobblehead? Mm-hmm. And not because I think it's a childish thing. I just think it in a derogatory way. This is like something for the kids. Like I would have a difficult guys.
It's fascinating to hear you defend the kids.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is something the kids go for, right? When I was a kid, I used to love looking at the early schedule. And figure out which day was a doubleheader and say, hey, Dad, can we go to the game on this day? And him not knowing, sure, we'll go. Like, yeah, it's doubleheader. Yeah, we get two. Or you find out that it was free hat giveaway day or whatever. You look at those ahead of time. Bobbleheads, I imagine that's a huge one for kids these days. But it's turned into a collector thing, and I feel like it takes away what's fun. I mean, it's a free giveaway, right?
Well, having been in the free giveaway business before, free giveaways lead to a lot of tension.
I know they do.
A lot of unexpected tension.
Yes.
Feels like it should be fun for everybody, but.
No, seriously, keep your shirt on.
Yeah. Feedback. They're selling pre-sale bobbleheads online. I made a deal with my buddy to trade my one of bobblehead for today for the one tomorrow so I can have them both as they connect to show back-to-back Cy Youngs. These two bobbleheads, indeed, the bases do fit together like a puzzle. Rob in Canton Township says $90 a piece on eBay already. The unique bobbleheads linked together like a puzzle. Did you mention that? It's from Ed in Rochester. Well, we have now, yes. Somebody else says it's 15,000 bobbleheads, not 1,500. That's from an unnamed texter. Bobbleheads click together, so the real collector / seller will get both and sell them as a pair. 248-539-9797. Gary in Monroe. What's up, Gary?
Yeah, I'm an usher at the stadium. I'll be working tonight.
Okay.
And they do give them away at every entrance, and it's 15,000.
Okay.
And the thing is, if you got two tickets and only you only get one. It goes to the person.
So each person that has a ticket gets one, but if you bought four tickets thinking you were going to get four bobbleheads and it's only you, but what if it's a family of four? Do they each get one?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
But if you've got, like you say, if you got four tickets and your three buddies don't go and they say, I want my bobblehead, they will not give you a bobblehead.
Okay. Gotcha. And have you been part of these before?
Oh yeah, I've worked there 5 years.
How do they go? How do these things come off? Are they easy to run? Hard to run?
It's hard to run. What happens if late one gate runs out? Then people get in and they run over to your gate. Well, they didn't give me one. Well, I can't help you. You know, it can be a mess. The worst mess was Cabrera's bobblehead giveaway because it was his last season. And, you know, the Tigers should have had 40,000 of them, not 15,000, because it caused a huge problem. Then a huge PR thing against the Tigers, you know.
Gary, this is what I get into about how free giveaways should never lead to bad feelings, ever.
Right.
Because it's not like the Tigers get them free. Somebody has to pay to manufacture these things. And so it's easy to say, oh, you should have 40,000. Well, that's a lot of money for a free giveaway. I hate how free giveaways can turn sour.
Well, they definitely turn sour. The second that last T-shirt is given away, you get people upset. But you have to cut. It gets cut off at some point. We've run out of stock. Sorry, but the cutoff time was 1:00. Then this person had to leave. The autograph
table
was
done.
Yeah,
that happened to you. You were next in line.
I was next in line for Dave Roseman's autograph when I was 8 years old.
And time ran out.
He had to go. They had to get. They had to travel and get out of there for the game.
And to be fair, there's always somebody who's next in line.
Yeah, and I was the next in line kid. It didn't. I think even then I got it, and I was disappointed, but I wasn't like crying disappointed as an 8-year-old.
Yeah.
My friend's mom who took us was pissed.
Yeah.
And looking back, it's like, they gotta go.
They're gonna say, can't you just do one more? Sure, I could do one more, but then
the 200 people behind you?
Yeah, are gonna say, sure, can't you just do one more?
It's all right, though. I got Milt Wilcox and Lou Whitaker that day.
There you go.
Yeah.
Owen in New Baltimore. Hi, Owen.
Hey, boys. How are we doing today?
We're great. Thank you.
So I just have a quick little story involving the bobblehead thing. So I was probably, 10 or 11, and they were doing a Miguel Cabrera MVP bobblehead giveaway. And the one that I received, it said NL instead of AL on there. I was able to sell that thing on eBay for probably $300 just because, of a misprint on there. I should have held on to it because it might be a little more worth. While nowadays, but
how old were you when you got it, Owen?
I was probably 11 or 12. This was probably 2013 or 14.
Gotcha. And did you say something when they gave it to her? Or did you notice it later that it was NL MVP?
I had noticed after we got back, and then right away after we noticed, my mom had looked it up, and we could sell for a couple $100 on eBay because it was a misprint.
What's crazy is, do you think you had the only one, or do you think they printed a whole bunch of them wrong?
I'm assuming there was a good amount of that batch because, by the time that I had got it and looked, there were already some that were, listed there for me to base the price off of.
Interesting. All right, well, there you go.
It's just a crazy thing. I don't know. It's just, they make those simple mistakes, and all of a sudden now the stuff's worth a lot more.
Thank you. 248-539-9797. All right, coming up, we will get to some Tiger talk. Chris McCoskey wrote a story about the trade deadline and the challenges of it. That coming up, we promised at 11:30, got sidetracked with the bobblehead story. So we will get to it coming up at 11:50 here on Carson Anderson on 97.1. Hey. It's in 2 days.
It'll be July 9th.
Mm-hmm.
There is something. I don't know.
You're going to know it as soon as I say it. The Detroit Pistons play their first summer league game.
Yeah.
I'm not falling for it this year. I'm not.
Sure you are.
I'm not.
You should.
I'm not going to.
Why?
Because I do every single year, and I come away from summer league basketball drawing wild conclusions. And I'm not going to do it this year. And I mean it this time.
Well, you can say that all you want. It's okay to get drawn into it. It's fun.
Oh, I get drawn into it. I got to remember. I do get drawn into it. But I got to remember it's fake feedback.
Yeah, well, it's like the Quebec League hockey stats.
Quebec Major Junior?
Yeah.
Yeah, Major Junior offensive stats.
They look fantastic, but it's all fake. It doesn't matter. Yeah. I mean, it's not fake. It just, it, in the grand scheme of things, when they move to the next level, it's not the same.
Nope.
Oh, that's awesome. You had 174 points last year. That's crazy good. What in the next year you go play the AHL and you have 41 points.
You could have convinced yourself that Anthony Mantha was going to break all of Wayne Gretzky's scoring records.
Sure.
But I'm not going to fall for summer league results.
You went with Anthony Mantha, huh?
I did. I remember following him in the Quebec Major Junior League and us talking about him for a bunch of years. It wasn't a bunch of years, but for a bunch of shows, thinking he was going to be something. But
he had a great year last year.
Did he score? Did he have 174 points?
He did not. Okay. But he had 33 goals, which was his. It's a career high in the NHL. Yeah, I have his Quebec League numbers.
Do you have them in front of you?
I do.
Yeah.
The first year he played in the Quebec League, he had 63 points. In 63 games, he had 51 points. The next year, 67 games, 89 points. Then his last year in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, 57 games, he had 57 goals and 63 assists for 120 points.
There you go.
Add another 38 points in 24 playoff games. Yeah.
The Quebec Major Junior is to hockey what Summer League is to basketball for me. And I'm not going to fall for it. Not this time. This time I mean it too. All right. Chris McCoskey did a story today in the Detroit News, beat writer that covers the Detroit Tigers, about how this trade deadline actually does shape up to be very, very tricky one for the Detroit Tigers. He asked this question. Do we really think that 500 is the benchmark for getting into the playoffs? Do you think that when it's all said and done that the last playoff team will be a 500 team?
No. I think it'll be slightly better.
Slightly better?
Mm-hmm.
So what, like
84 wins.
84 wins. So then you ask yourself the question, can the Tigers go 44-28 the rest of the way? Because that would put them at 84 wins. I mean, as he wrote, if you think 81 wins, 500 record will get you into the playoffs, why wouldn't you roll the dice on going 41-31 the rest of the way with Skubal? We all know you have to make a decision in 22 games, but there's some truth to this. And I've been thinking about this a lot lately. Early on, I said, hey, in the Dylan Larkin saga, I said, one thing we need to consider is that he may come back. That they might not be able to find a trade, and he may come back. And this is something I brought up as a talking point that I think it's a possibility, but not a great possibility. But let's not forget that nothing may materialize, and they may be forced to bring him back. And I've gone from offering that up as a bit of a, hey, just don't forget that this is one possible outcome, to now thinking that that's a flip of the coin. And that's where I'm at. I think even the people that called me an idiot at the beginning, and there were plenty of you, maybe some of them would now acknowledge, okay, there's a better than a 0% chance that Dylan Larkin will be back. Some of you won't. Some of you still think I'm an idiot. But I am starting to think it's a 50-50 proposition that the Tigers are actually going to buy. And it's not, I think that there is a better chance, scary chance, that the Godfather offer for Skubal is never really going to materialize.
You shut your mouth.
Well, we have these wild dreams, and I don't think Scott Harris, if you're in Scott Harris's shoes, you can't just take any offer. You can't.
No, but what you will have are multiple teams that are asking for the commodity.
You hope. That's how you create the best market.
Well, I think there will be multiple teams. But the question is, that's how you get the offer to get as good as it can get. At some point, someone's just going to say no. You know, if you get the Yankees, the Dodgers, and, you know, whoever else, throw another team out there that wants to get in there. And it's, if you got three teams there, okay, then make your best offer. And it ends up being a game of poker with those other teams. But they're going to have to step up and top each other. Now, at some point, you're like, enough's enough. And with the Yankees, they've already let it be known that there are certain players that they are not going to part with. I doubt that you're not going to get the top prospect from the Dodgers, but they have so many good prospects that maybe you get their second or their third or their fourth, which are all still top 100 prospects in the game. But that's what you need. You need multiple teams. And as long as the teams know that this guy is available, he's the best pitcher in baseball. And with a proven track record anyway. So as long as he stays healthy here for his next few starts, I think there is going to be wild interest in Tarek Skubal moving forward.
I'm not as convinced. I want you to be right. I want this to be a Godfather offer. I want this to be James Shields for Fernando Tatis Jr.
Understand, I don't necessarily think it's going to be a Godfather offer, okay? But I do think that when it's all said and done, you're going to get at least one top 100 prospect that we're all going, okay, well, they got this guy. But in the end, you're going to have to make a deal.
What you just described to me sounded underwhelming.
Well, I think it starts with that. Maybe you get more than that. And I hope that you get more than that because it's Tarek Skubal, for crying out loud. But you have to find the teams that have those multiple players in the top 100 or that you would envision. Obviously, the Tigers have their own list of top 100 prospects in baseball. But you need more than one team bidding on it, for sure. Because if you know you're not going to be able to sign him in the offseason, then you got to trade him, or you should trade him. And at some point, though, it's going to be like, okay, if the best offer we got was some dude who's like the 20th best prospect on their list, and I'm not impressed with their list, then why bother moving him?
Who's the list? Are you talking about another team's list or the Tigers?
Somebody else's team. Yeah, somebody else's list.
Well, I think they'll get a better offer than somebody else's 20th best prospect.
I imagine they would, but I'm just trying to put it out there that if you only have one team that is seriously bidding, you know, and let's say the Dodgers are the only team that's seriously bidding, and everybody else is like, yeah, I'm not going to go what you guys are asking for a rental, and it ends up being, you know, the number 17 on the Dodgers list. You're not inclined to do that. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think you're going to have many teams there bidding for his services. Well, like you saw the same thing happen with CC Sabathia years ago or any other player that was moved at the trade deadline. You know, Tarek Skubal he's a prize to be had. I hope they don't hang on to it too long. I felt like that's what happened with the Houston Astros deal with Verlander. But it seems like this is the way that the talking heads are talking about this.
Everybody's talking about it. Everybody is talking about it, and all conversations at the trade deadline start in the media with Skubal. I'm just worried that there's nobody that can really bid against the Dodgers. And so the Dodgers aren't going to be compelled to really go crazy. I mean, if you are the Dodgers and you have the best roster, the best record, the best system, and the most money, who are you really threatened by, even if they add Skubal? Because they might pass on Skubal and say, we're just fine with making a far less, a different deal for a player that can help us to solidify our chances and fill a real need and let somebody else pay the high price for Skubal. And, you know, I mean, I always cite the James Shields for Fernando Tatis Jr. deal. That trade was one that when they got Tatis, you know what his record was? You know where he was in his career? He was 17 years old and he hadn't played a game of Major League Baseball yet. And I looked at it as a Padre fan and I was looking at, all right, what else did they get? That guy's so freaking far away. Turned out he was a great, great, great player.
Playing as a 19-year-old
player. Yeah, and so, you know, the return on this, if it looks like that, if it's a 17-year-old or somebody that is in A ball, and we always talk about wanting guys that are major league ready, and I'm sure Harris is telling teams, but if somebody all they want to offer is a player that might be the next Fernando Tatis Jr., but he's 17 years old and he feels like he's a few steps away, I'm not sure Harris says yes to that.
Well, if they think he's going to be the next Fernando Tatis, they will.
I get it. I get it, but but it, as we all know, any 17-year-old, even Tatis, you couldn't possibly know. But you had some ideas. But the baseball, as you move up levels, there's so many trap doors. 248-539-9797. We'll get to your phone calls next. 97.1.